Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
Get healthy, be healthy, stay healthy. It's the Power of Health with Dr. Jeffrey Burke.
So, Kristen, I think I'm just going to go right to the meat of the situation. In when we're talking about autism, give a definition of what you think that people will be able to relate and understand about the definition of autism.
Sure. Well, basically, when you look at autism, it's both a neurological and a biological disorder. And we're looking at children between the ages of 18 months and 5 years of age of when we start losing things like eye contact and speech, and they start doing things that are repetitive over and over and over again. And many parents say, well, gosh, my child does things that are repetitive. Does that mean that my child has autism? And no, it means when they do something in an excessive amount. So meaning my son might line up objects for, 4 to 5 hours straight. Maybe they tap on certain objects for hours and hours and hours, or they flip through magazines over and over and over again. There are also many children, I would say between 70 and 80% of children that are reported have gastrological issues. So they become very picky eaters. They won't try new foods. And again, to the extreme. And they also don't have regular bowel movements often. They either have constipation or diarrhea. Often we'll see a lot of these kiddos have eczema and dark circles under their eyes. They have sleep issues. I know for even my own son, I couldn't get him to sleep. I would have to rock him for hours and hours and hours and hours. And again, many families might think, well, gosh, I've heard some of these things or some of these symptoms my child might have, but again, we have to remember it's to the extreme. Often, these children also don't peer play, meaning they might play parallel next to a child, but we're not seeing them engage in any peer play, whether it be at the park or a mommy and me group or even with their siblings.
Now, let's say that we do get a diagnostic done. Is the diagnostic process, is it pinpointed? Is it accurate?
You know, every child's diagnosis is a little different.
Yeah.
Today, what we're seeing more so is they're getting diagnosed with ASD, Autism Spectrum Disorder, which really is a wide range of different things. And so, it really depends. Some children, it seems as though they fall into the category or maybe they have, 3 to 4 different characteristics and sometimes therapy and then diet and other things seem to help them. Where other children may have many more characteristics, but yet they're both being diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. So it's really very wide range of things going on today.
Now, you get a diagnosis with your child and you come home, and I know what happens to so many different facets of our society today. Sometimes we get a diagnosis and we get dressed and we go home, and sometimes we're on our own. So if a parent does get a diagnosis of their child being autistic, or they're pretty darn near sure that autism is the diagnosis, what does a parent do from the very beginning?
You know, it's hard because often they just get a pamphlet. And, I want to back up a little bit. When you ask, about autism, when I said they could lose speech and lose eye contact, some parents report that they never hear babbling or they never even see any eye contact. So for those parents out there, you definitely want to find somebody right away that understands what they're looking at. So I want to make sure that the audience can, understand both sides. But after you get that diagnosis, for me, I can tell you what we recommend at the Autism Hope Alliance. We recommend looking at diet right away and look at finding a doctor that understands autism in a very broad way. MedMaps.org is a great website to go to. These are MAPS doctors, which stands for Medical Academy of Pediatric of Special Needs. They're going to look at the child from going in, versus throwing therapy at them. So they're going to look at things like their gut, the bacteria in their gut. They're going to look at diet. They're going to look at their blood to make sure that there's not a deficiency somewhere. And so really trying to help the child from inside out. So that's one of the first things I would do was look for a doctor. But again, there's waiting lists. And so I would start looking at different groups out there like the Autism Hope Alliance, and there's others as well, that really believe that foundation is really the diet, and what we put in our bodies has a direct effect on how we act, feel, and behave. So looking at something like the gluten-free, dairy-free diet, looking at good probiotics, which I know you guys talked about earlier, looking at enzymes, and really trying to help that child feel their very, very best so that we can get the most optimal benefit for that child.
Natasha, how do parents learn the connection between the diagnosis of the autism and then moving forward and learning about digestion and the immune system and diet? And, you know, they're progressing probably at a different pace than adults would, but when they're relating it to the child. But obviously, it is something that they need to learn right from the beginning for the relationship between these situations.
Yeah, I think the most important thing for the parent to learn that it's not a simplistic diagnosis, as Kirsten so aptly put it. It's a number of manifestations of behavioral problems. And look, obsessive compulsive disorder was definitely associated with what's going on in the gut. And we know that obsessive compulsive behavior is also attributed to some autistic children. We know that violent behavior is also caused by chemicals produced in the gut. And so again, we can say that this is, you know, presenting itself as a psychological problem, and thus far we haven't looked at it from a physiological level. And the problem is that really information is giving out of context. And I can just say that until we understand what exactly the child has and look up all the multitudes of neurological disorders, whether we call it attention deficit, whether we call it autism, whether we call it, you know, a stress behavior, whether we call it depression, whatever it is, it's affiliated with what's going on in the processing of the food in the gut and the chemicals that the gut is producing that's affecting the brain and the person's behavior. It's as simple as that. And the biggest problem we have in the dietary supplement industry is a lack of standards, because people will throw out names of categories, whether it's omega-3s or probiotics or enzymes. And if those categories don't have standards, so that when a parent or a person that needs to get the proper amount of a certain dietary supplement is not assured that when they're paying that money or getting that enzyme or getting the right probiotic or getting the right omega-3, how can they even measure what's happening in a very complex situation inside of their children's gut? So that's what's distressing to me. I think we have to really move on the front of the standardization. I think we really have to move in determining a specific program for each child, because the variants may be different. We just like to throw a label on it and figure out what foods are really causing this chemical reaction that the child is having with his behavioral problems. And that's basically, I'm getting very simplistic. I can get very technical and I would lose most of the people. But whether you're a medical doctor or a parent or just the average consumer, I can assure you that without kind of standardization and a willingness to really drop everything and invest yourself in getting down to answers regarding your specific child's needs, we're going to continue to see these problems, you know, just blow up from one generation to the next.
Kirsten, why do specializing the diet and these specialized diets that you have learned in your sector, you know, how do they help people on the spectrum?
Well, that's a great question. So many of our kids, you know, and when I say children, I mean of all ages. So if someone's listening and they haven't started the diet and their child's 22, I think it's beneficial for at any age. But, you know, when our children are diagnosed, especially in the beginning, and many of us might go to an allergist and look at the different allergies that may or may not be happening, often the allergy tests don't come back always 100% accurate. And so what we're seeing is these children be very picky on certain foods, and we see them kind of almost be addictive to the foods that they really shouldn't be having. And so, you know, I can speak from my own personal experience, and I'm sure for those listening, they're probably thinking, oh my gosh, the same thing happened with my child or is happening with my child. My son at some point, around 15 months, decided that he was not going to try any new foods, and he was only going to go after certain foods, and it just seemed like it just snowballed, and he only wanted chicken nuggets and french fries and cookies and waffles and crackers and gallons of milk. And when I learned that the food was so important, what I was giving him, that, you know, noticed that it was almost like, for lack of a better term, he looked like a drug addict going off drugs when I took these foods away from him. He got very, very upset. He got violent, even at under you know, the age of two, he would start to bite and pinch and scratch, and he wouldn't sleep, and he didn't want to be introduced to any of these other foods I was trying to give him. And that lasted for about 10 days. Now, everybody has different experiences, so maybe their time lasts longer or shorter. Definitely want to emphasize that. But as soon as I started really removing these kind of toxic foods from him, regardless of what the allergy test said, he started to kind of clear up a little bit, meaning the eczema started little by little getting better. His eyes looked less foggy, and he seemed to be more present. Didn't mean that he didn't have autism still, but he became more present, and then we started really learning about different things, as Natasha was talking about earlier, with looking for good, you know, omegas and good probiotics and good vitamins and, you know, good enzymes, and really starting to introduce that to him. But with that food, it's so important because, like I said earlier, you know, it really has a direct effect on how we act, feel, and behave. And our kids are going after foods for a good portion of our children. I would say 70 to 80% of our kids are going after foods that really they should not be having. And so I always recommend parents to do a food journal and write down everything their children's eating and then write down their behaviors or symptoms, regardless whether it be they become hyper or lethargic or aggressive, maybe they aren't having solid stools, whatever that might be, write that down, and that way you have a better understanding of how that food is relating.
You know, Natasha, it's got to be really difficult for these families, because sometimes the families have maybe an autistic child, maybe two or three other children, maybe one other child that does not have autism, who's watching all the food commercials on TV, that wants all the sugared cereals and wants to go to the drive-thrus. And I bet finding that balance, and I know Kristen will agree, you know, we are, it's a situation where this is a major, major battle for the parents.
Oh, absolutely. I think people are clueless to the fact that the chemical foods that we've introduced into our diet for the last 50 to 60 years stimulate a certain group of microbes in the gut. And yes, they can make you addicted to this food, and they'll pump in toxins into your body and chemicals that'll make you feel miserable and even violent, and having the same kind of reaction as when you remove an addict from a drug. Because now they're being denied the very foods that they want. Remember that the 100 trillion bacteria that line the 27 feet of your GI tract produce chemicals that affect your mood and your thinking. So it's a combination of not having the right microflora transferred from your mother at birth. And in fact, even if she's breastfeeding you, or and if it's a vaginal birth, this is what we're seeing in the westernized countries. And, you know, having a few of these strikes against you, now you predispose the child to having a certain group of bacteria that are going to stimulate certain desires in you to eat simple sugars and simple carbohydrates. And the minute you take the child off to those simple sugars and carbohydrates, you know, there's going to be a reaction. So this is something that parents fail to understand. And I dislike when companies try to tell parents that, you know, there's a simple, you know, method, you know, take this probiotic and we're going to treat this symptom, or take this probiotic, we're going to take this symptom. The point is, you have to have a standardized product that addresses the issues both in the small intestine and the large intestine and the transient flora, and you have to come up with a composition where you know each microbe that you're adding to that very complex microbiota inside your gut is going to have a certain effect. You can't just throw in a bunch of bacteria, multi-strains, and hope to understand what's going on in the gut. That's not it. It's the same thing like withdrawing certain foods from the diet. You have to withdraw them, you know, one at a time to figure out what it is that's causing your child to behave badly when they have that certain food. And believe me, with any parent who has ever gone to a children's party where a lot of sugary foods and drinks are served, the children get almost into a violent state by the second or third hour. And having raised my own child, I had to take her away from these parties because the children would become so hyperactive, the parents could not control them. And this is even 25 years ago. So I can imagine what's going on now. So again, to summarize, we have to stop thinking simplistically. We have to look at eliminating things that we know will cause this in the diet, regardless of what, you know, the doctor finds in your allergy test, because allergy tests are only an indication. We have to know what probiotic bacteria we're giving to each child and in what amount. We have to know what exercise program we have to get for the child to get some stimulation moving, and whatever other therapy you can help, whether it's speech therapy or whatever you find effective for your child, we as a community have to support each other and make sure that we know what we're testing on these children who are crying out to us for our help.
Kristen, let me ask you a question. Is it ever surprising to the parents? Maybe the child was, you know, upwards of doing fine, one-year-old, two-year-old, three-year-old, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, were there always signs, or were they just not noticeable, or can it just come out of nowhere?
You know, again, I think every parent's story is unique to them. I can mm-hmm. speak on our own story. Our son was developing totally fine. He was born 11 pounds, 1 ounce, 24 and a half inches long.
Wow, big boy.
He was 2.5 weeks overdue, and no, I did not deliver him naturally, although I tried. I get that question asked often, and no, I did not have, you know, diabetes in my pregnancy. He was just a very healthy, overdue child. He basically had his first words at 9 months, and he was putting, you know, almost two words together by the time he was 12 months of age and walking and doing everything that we would see a typical child, and often he would even beat the milestones of children his own age. And we lost him at 15 months. All of his language, literally, it felt like overnight, was gone, and his potty training skills were somewhat gone, and he no longer could really look at us, and he became kind of in his own world, and he got very into his own world and almost locked in there for quite some time, and we didn't hear his voice until he was 6 years of age. And so, you know, he still has autism, and we're still trying our best to help him every day, but he is talking now, and he's looking now, and he's learning to read and write, and he's 14. So, you know, again, every child's story is different. Every parent's story and experience is different, but I know what I'm saying to many of the listeners out there that have children with autism probably have experienced very similar stories to what we have. And, you know, so, yeah, we had absolutely no idea. I can tell you this. My son has been my greatest teacher. I don't remember really ever going into a health food store prior to, you know, my son's learning that he had, you know, all these different issues and then his diagnosis. You know, I never thought we ate bad. I thought we were pretty healthy on the American kind of food diet, and then learned, you know, another way and a much, much better way.
I think we're going to learn as time goes on that this is going to be an issue where, I think when we started thinking about some of the other diseases that were very, very vast and we didn't think about them because they weren't in our circle of friends and family, I think this is going to be something that we're going to see a little closer to home. So getting a better understanding and learning more about autism in general, learning about the digestive system, keeping our bodies healthy on the inside, and going back to the source of many health problems that we have, which are faulty and compromised guts and digestive systems, and getting them back in order with proper products that are put together with the correct strains of products and that are manufactured under stringent studies and stats that bring us a quality product consistently from the companies doing it right every single time. Our products have to have integrity, they have to have quality, and we have to be able to depend on them and have the peace of mind that goes with it when we're dealing with our supplementation. And that means education, that means knowledge we have to ask for and learn along the way. And we need to make sure that we are staying on top of our health and nutrition. And we need to choose wisely because it's becoming more and more of a critical point of our health and longevity. We don't get to sit back on our laurels like we did for a long time, thinking that things only affect people that are older. It doesn't happen that anyway. We have to do it a lot differently today than we did in the past. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Burke, and this is The Power of Health on Radio MD. For more information on this and all of my segments, visit my show page at RadioMD.com. Thank you for listening, and stay well.